Happy Saturday. I hope you're doing well out there on this beautifully hot weekend. This is Zach, and you're listening to Reads on the Bitcoin Well podcast. When I sat down to write this piece Monday, Bitcoin had clawed its way back to around 64,000, and the mood was cautiously euphoric. 5 straight days of ETF inflows, something like 727 million rushing back through the front door, BlackRock leading the parade. Bitcoin even poked its head above 67,000 at one point. The story practically wrote itself. Wall Street's back, baby. The bull run's on schedule. Everybody relax. And then the rest of this week happened. The US and Iran started throwing elbows again. Oil spiked. Treasury yields ripped to fresh highs for the year. And stocks, gold, and Bitcoin all wobbled in the same breath. Add in the market suddenly getting cold feet about whether all this AI spending will ever actually pay off, and well, you know, so much for relaxing. But here's the thing, that whiplash, that is the point. Gold set its all-time high back in January and has been drifting ever since. The national debt just quietly clicked past $39 trillion. Big money is buying Bitcoin with one hand while keeping the other firmly on the exit door. I'm looking at you, strategy. Which brings us to today's read. We're gonna sit in that gap between price and belief. Why the crowd doesn't trust the rebound, why access is not ownership, and why an ETF share is a claim on a claim, while if you have actual keys, they are, well, yours. Questions, pushback, orange-pilling wins you wanna brag about, or topics you want me to cover? Email me at z.adair@bitcoinwell.com. That's z.addair@bitcoinwell.com. Just put Bitcoin Podcast in the subject line. I read and answer everyone. Hold your keys, hold your sovereignty, and let's get into it. Why nobody trusts the Bitcoin rebound, and why that is the point, by Zachary Adair. When the biggest corporate bull in history paused their buying and sold, everyone expected the floor to give way, but it didn't really move. This week, the financial headlines came back to life. ETF inflows are surging, BlackRock reportedly adding another $600 million to its balance sheet, and the price of Bitcoin is acting remarkably well. Yet underneath the surface of this apparent recovery, the fear and greed index remains locked at 28, extreme fear. We're looking at a market where the price is behaving beautifully, but the collective mood is completely broken. To understand why, you have to look at two different screens open side by side. On the left, you have the loud screen. Bitcoin is trading back around 64K, which is roughly 87,000 in Canadian dollars as I write this. The institutional coverage is euphoric. Brokers are selling. Analysts are charting. And the mainstream financial press has settled on its story for the week. Wall Street has returned, and the bull run is back on schedule. On the right, you have the quiet screen. The sentiment index is parked in the gutter. Gold is hovering near record highs, which tells you that big capital is still quietly looking for a bunker. The market has not decided that the global economic danger is over. It is a market that is willing to take a little speculative risk with one hand while keeping its other hand firmly on the exit door. Most people are watching the left screen, mesmerized by the price action, but the right screen is where the real truth is hiding. The crowd does not trust the recovery, and that gap between price and belief is the most important lesson of the year. The day the giant sold. If this price recovery were a genuine reset in market conviction, the collective mood would be catching up to the charts. Instead, we're witnessing the exact opposite. The price firmed up while sentiment stayed fractured. That's not what belief looks like. That's what relief looks like. This fragile mood is the result of a massive psychological shock that hit the market earlier this month. For the last 4 years, investors operated under a comfortable assumption. The world's largest corporate treasury holder of Bitcoin would only ever buy. The company's relentless accumulation was treated as a permanent, unbreakable floor for the asset. Then the giant paused. For the first time since 2022, the corporate treasury giant Strategy enacted a multi-week buying freeze, prioritizing cash reserves to manage its debt and preferred stock. Worse yet, regulatory filings reveal that they actually sold a $216 million sliver of their Bitcoin holdings to pay distributions. To a market that had built its entire thesis on the assumption of a permanent corporate bid, this was a terrifying moment. If the most aggressive bull on earth was pausing and selling, surely the floor was about to give way. The bears prepared for a fire sale, but a funny thing happened on the way to the panic. The floor didn't move. The market absorbed the sale, the buying freeze continued, and yet the price climbed back to $64,000 anyway. This is the ultimate proof of a concept that Wall Street is desperately trying to hide from you. Bitcoin doesn't need a savior. It does not need a permanent corporate bid, and it does not care who is selling. Access is not ownership. What actually returned to the market this week? It wasn't trust. Access returned. Capital found a comfortable familiar wrapper, the Spot ETF, a trusted corporate titan, BlackRock, vouched for the asset, and the money flowed back in through the front door that traditional finance had already built for it. This is a very real signal about the demand for price exposure. It's not a signal that the average investor understands what they're holding. There's a vast, dangerous chasm between having access to an asset and actually owning it. An ETF share is a claim on a claim. You own a digital entry sitting on a broker's internal ledger, wrapped by an institutional issuer, and custodied by a third party who holds the actual cryptographic keys, at least they claim to. There are three separate layers of institutional counterparty risk sitting between you and your Bitcoin. In a calm, rising market, you never feel those layers. In a terrified one, you start to realize what those layers actually cost you. We wrote about this pattern recently at bitcoinwell.com/blog with the article titled, "By the Time They Let You In, the Money's Already Made." The financial products that Wall Street builds are designed to give you the illusion of participation while keeping the real sovereignty in their hands. If you want a concrete example of how dangerous this middleman architecture is, look at what is happening to the payment system. Just last week, a major centralized payments custodian froze a simple $5 Lightning tip. They refused to release their funds until the sender provided their legal name, government identification, and home address. This happened very publicly on X, and in case you're wondering, the custodian was Strike, a $5 gift frozen and interrogated by an algorithm. Why? Because a centralized custodian sat in the middle of the transaction, and a centralized custodian will always eventually use their position to gate, monitor, and restrict your behavior. That's what access looks like. It's convenient right up until the moment it's paused, conditioned, or completely revoked. And it's not necessarily even the custodian's fault. It's simply a fact of working within the modern legal system. It works beautifully up until the day you actually need that asset to be yours. The trap of the premier destination. This push to bring Bitcoin back into a centralized cage is accelerating. Recently, the U.S. Treasury Secretary told Congress that he wants America to be the premier destination for digital assets. That sounds incredibly friendly on a press release, but you must ask yourself what a premier destination actually means to a government that's carrying $39 trillion in national debt. A premier destination means a centralized perimeter. It means keeping assets inside a digital fence where they can be easily monitored, taxed, administered, and eventually seized if the state's debt crisis enters its final panic-driven stage. The state's invitation to host your Bitcoin is simply an invitation to a more comfortable cage, and the Wall Street ETF are the gold-plated bars. This centralization is happening alongside a massive quiet crackdown on true financial privacy. In a landmark ruling this month, the Second Circuit Court of Appeals held that even face-to-face, informal peer-to-peer Bitcoin transactions can qualify as unlicensed money transmitting, quote unquote. The legal net is tightening around the on and off ramps. The legacy system is perfectly happy to let you speculate on the price of Bitcoin, provided you keep your wealth parked on their balance sheets where they hold the keys and write the rules. The part of Bitcoin they can't control is the only part that really matters. The core principle of saleability. Karl Menger, the legendary founder of the Austrian School of Economics, spent the 1870s deconstructing a deceptively simple question. Why does anything become money in the first place? His conclusion was that money is not created by a government decree or a corporate committee. Money is an organic market phenomenon that emerges from the most saleable good in an economy. It's the asset that holds its value most effectively across time and space, remaining highly exchangeable no matter how badly the surrounding society is panicking. Menger understood that the ultimate test of a monetary good isn't how it behaves during an era of cheap credit and economic peace. The test of money is what endures when confidence collapses. When the fear and greed index sits at 28 and the crowd refuses to trust the price recovery, that isn't a design flaw. That is the test. This is the exact environment where the pretenders are exposed and where savers discover what is actually money and what was just a speculative story that they told each other during the bull market. The indifference of the protocol. While the talking heads on television argued over whether the corporate buying freeze was the end of this Bitcoin experiment, the network itself didn't blink. The transaction fees stayed reasonable, the difficulty adjusted automatically, the costs of running a full node remained cheap enough that any hobbyist could verify the history of the ledger on a cheap laptop from their kitchen table. The underlying machinery of the network continued to do its job with total, absolute indifference to how anyone felt about the price. That indifference is the primary security feature of the system. The Bitcoin protocol doesn't read the sentiment index. It doesn't care if BlackRock is buying or if a corporate giant is selling. It produces a block roughly every 10 minutes without a single missed beat, and it has done so for over 17 years. It's boring in the most magnificent way possible. Boring is what survives when empires inflate their currencies to zero. Underneath that boring predictability sits 50 years of unbreakable mathematics. In 1976, Whitfield Diffie and Martin Hellman solved a mathematical riddle that had stumped cryptographers for centuries. They split the cryptographic key in two, a public key that you can share with the world and a private key that you must never reveal to anyone. That single elegant breakthrough is the reason a self-custody wallet can exist today. It's the reason you can hold an asset that no central bank, court ruling, or treasury secretary can reach. To take your Bitcoin, they would have to solve the math, and the physical laws of the universe don't negotiate. Even the legacy system's loudest defenders keep confirming this by accident. Recently, a prominent macro analyst went on television to argue that gold's great virtue is that it is completely useless for anything other than storing value, which prevents industrial demand from diluting its supply. He was making the absolute case for Bitcoin without even realizing it. Bitcoin is that exact economic principle taken to its logical digital conclusion. Bitcoin is useless at everything except being pristine money, which makes it impossible to inflate or corrupt, meaning it's the perfect money. Build your personal reserve. When buyers return but trust doesn't, when the loud story is institutional access and the quiet story is absolute scarcity, the answer to what actually survives is incredibly short. The asset you hold yourself. Not the ETF share, which is a claim on a claim. Not the balance at a commercial custodian who will freeze your funds over a $5 transaction. The only version of Bitcoin that delivers on its revolutionary promise is the coin whose private keys exist only in your physical possession. That is the only version of wealth that doesn't depend on someone else's balance sheet, someone else's regulatory compliance, or someone else's permission. Sovereignty isn't free. It asks something of you. The most common way people lose their Bitcoin is not through a sophisticated nation-state hack. It's through personal negligence, losing the seed phrase, or failing to set up a secure, long-term inheritance plan. Taking full ownership of your money means accepting the responsibility of becoming your own bank. But that responsibility is the price of the only thing Wall Street can never package inside a fund: the mathematical certainty that your savings can't be diluted, frozen, or stolen. Access can be revoked at any time by a corporate board or a regulatory agency. True ownership can't be altered by the most powerful government on earth. The market has drawn a line in bright ink, and the crowd is looking at the wrong screen to see it. Extreme fear isn't a signal to wait for a custodian's permission. It's a reminder of what permission-based money is actually worth. When you're ready to move past speculation and enter the world of true ownership, Bitcoin Well is here to build that bridge. We don't hold your coins, we don't manage your keys, and we don't sit in the middle of you and your future. We simply deliver real, sovereign Bitcoin straight to your custody, where the only person with discretion over your savings is you. Hold your keys. Hold your sovereignty.